Straight Talk on News Talk 94.3 WRHI is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill, Manning Kimmel.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. My name is Manning Kimmel. The program is called Straight Talk. We do it every weekday afternoon, talking about Rock Hill, Fort Mill, TKK, the great county of York, and everything else up and down I-77. And we do it right here on WRHI, South Carolina's 2016 Radio Station of the Year. Our broadcast presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, always ready. Good Pharmacy is with us, your hometown pharmacy. Ebenezer Road to Camden Avenue in Rock Hill, as is highspeedweb.net that streams our signal 24/7, 365. A young lady by the name of Liz Williams joins us today. She has authored a new book called No Ordinary Soldier. It's about somebody in her family that she's going to tell us about. Very interestingly, I met this lady about, a month or 6 weeks ago when I was over in Sun City and talking about my favorite topic, which is Pearl Harbor. And up comes this lady with Liz Williams, and she says, by the way, I've got a story to tell. And I said, really? So here we are today. First of all, tell everybody a little bit about Liz Williams, if you would.
Oh, thank you for your kind invitation, Manning. I appreciate being here today. I am a semi-retired writer and editor. I worked for the U.S. government, the Congressional Budget Office, and the General Accounting Office, which is now the Government Accountability Office. And my background was more in technical and scholarly writing, but since my semi-retirement, I've done more things in the creative line.
So when you say semi-retired, are you still doing work for Uncle Sam?
No, not for Uncle Sam, but I do write. I've had some articles published.
Good.
And, of course, this is my first book.
Your first book.
Yes.
So the writing that you did for the General Accounting Office, who would read that besides you?
Okay. Very good question. Very good question. Well, it was for the public and for anyone who wanted to read it. And what we did was the General Accounting Office has mainly accountants and people they call evaluators. And what they would do, they would be asked by a Congress member to go in and assess a particular program, whether it has to do with health or welfare or whatever. They go in, they would assess the program, see if it was adhering to certain accountant principles, accounting principles, and other kinds of standards. And then they bring back their data to the office, and then we writers and editors would shape it into something that was, you know, the lay people could understand.
Well, the GAO is really the government's watchdog. I mean, they're the ones that are supposed to go out and tell us where the bad spending is going on,
exactly.
And who's not doing this and who's not doing that.
Exactly.
So I guess it's what you wrote from what they gave you that said, yay, they're doing a good job, or no, they're doing a lousy
exactly.
job.
Exactly. Right.
Well, we could do a whole story on that.
We surely could, yes.
So how many years did you do that?
I worked for the General Accounting Office for 9 years.
9 years?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you lived in Washington for how long?
I lived in the Washington suburbs from 77 to 99.
And you still have your sanity?
Yes, I do.
My God, aren't you glad that you've come to God's country?
No. Huh? I actually think Washington is a wonderful place to live. There are so many activities, museums, culture. It was
It's just all the other stuff.
It's all the traffic and yes.
It's all the politicians.
The Beltway stuff,
yeah,
yes.
Okay. So here we are. You decided you were going to write a book, and the topic about No Ordinary Soldier has to do with your dad?
That's right.
So did you have an epiphany one day? Said, I want to write something about my father? I mean, how did this all start?
How it came about was in 2003, my mother sold her home, and she got rid of everything, and in the attic were her and my father's 300 letters written during World War II. And she said, do you want these? And I said, yes, heck yes, I want them. And it wasn't until a few years after that I actually started going through them and reading them and seeing how substantive they were. And it dawned on me, there's a story here. My dad died when I was 18. So I didn't really, at that time as a teenager, I didn't really ask him much about his war career, you know.
Sure.
Kids don't think of that. But when I started reading these letters and putting things together, I realized, gee, my dad saw Pearl Harbor. And, you know, what else did he see? So I went through the letters and I found out.
So your father was in what branch of the military?
He was in when he went in, it was July of 1940, it was the Army Air Corps. And he got sent to Hickam Field in Honolulu. And thinking, you know, in July 1940, he couldn't see the future. He thought, oh, this will be fun, Hawaii.
Oh, boy.
What could possibly happen?
Right. Now, was he a pilot or was he a mechanic? What
he was not a pilot. He was in the Signal Corps.
Okay.
So he worked in communications. But the Signal Corps is a combat branch. So after Pearl Harbor, he went to the Gilbert Islands, the Marshall Islands, and Saipan. So he had nine months of combat.
So these letters encompass that whole nine-month period?
Yes, and also when he came back and mustered out in Miami Beach, my parents still weren't together, so that I had that piece, that Miami Beach piece, too. Yeah.
Jeez.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So the guy that you really didn't know that well,
right,
all of a sudden, wow, look at all this stuff he was involved with.
Exactly, exactly.
So let's start with his first assignment. You say it was Hickam Field at Pearl Harbor.
Right.
In 1940, when life was a lot different than it was after 1941. So his letters at that time were to whom?
Well, they're to my mother. Now, okay. I have a few letters to other Army buddies that somehow, I guess he sent them back. I have to say, too, that he also sent all of my mother's letters back to her for safekeeping, which is why I have the archive that I have.
Okay.
So they were a little forward-thinking, my parents.
So you got both his letters and her letters.
I do.
Wow.
So it's a story of not only his experience, but her experience on the home front.
All right.
Yeah.
So here he is. He goes out. They were married before he
No, they were not. In fact, they were really just friends before the war, and the courtship grew in the correspondence.
So they fell in love with the letters.
Absolutely.
Via the letters.
Absolutely.
And then after the war, and after he got out of the Army, that's
well,
when
he
back?
Actually came home on a furlough in September of 1943. He had been gone since, as I say, July of 1940. He came home in September 1943, and they were married that week.
And then he went back in?
And then he went back. Yep. And you know what? I think that's a fairly common story. I don't think that's that unusual.
All righty. So your dad is out at your future dad
mm-hmm,
is
right.
out at Hickam Field.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you learn from the letters about what he was seeing at Hickam Field or what things were like?
I didn't learn much from the letters because by that time there was censorship. So he couldn't write anything about the event. But I was able, through research, and I was able to get a couple oral histories of men from his unit so I could piece together the story of really what was going on that day in his unit. And he was on duty when the bombs hit. And I even found his name in one of the oral histories. So, I mean, he wasn't a bigwig, and I should say that the title No Ordinary Soldier does not imply that my father was some kind of war hero, because he definitely was not. No Ordinary Soldier comes from a term that my mother uses to describe him in one of her letters. So that's where that comes from. But I will say this. My father was on duty, and all of the men in his unit, from what I learned, performed their duties to the best of their abilities. And I will say, too, I know your grandfather and your father have a naval background, but I have to say that I feel a little left out sometimes, because all the stories of Pearl Harbor talk about and show pictures of ships being bombed, but places were bombed all over Oahu. And as you know from your background, of course, Hickam Field was bombed. 121 men lost their lives. And there were men that did take to the air. George Welsh was the first American to shoot down a Japanese plane, and he was in my father's Air Force, the 7th Air Force, which is really an unsung Air Force.
You know what's interesting about Hickam Field, and I don't know whether this was in any of your dad's letters, but the airplanes were stacked wingtip to wingtip because the concern then was about sabotage.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And if we bunch the airplanes together, that way those who are patrolling the field can keep a closer eye on what's going on.
Correct.
All that was reported to Washington, D.C. They all said that's a smart thing to do, blah, blah, blah. Well, it set them up as sitting ducks.
Absolutely.
When the Japanese attacked.
Absolutely.
Was there anything like that in your dad's letters?
Well, no. As I say, he couldn't really talk about
censored.
Anything. It was a year later in one of his letters when he wrote, a year ago, I feared for my life. I didn't know whether I would be alive or dead or captive of the Japs.
So. Sure. I mean, there was 2,400 people, you know, killed.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, All right, so he was at Hickam Field when the attack occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And how long after that did he stay there?
Okay, he stayed there until early February of 44. He stayed there quite a while.
Yeah.
And he did attain the rank of staff sergeant. He was an enlisted man.
Okay.
And so he not only worked on communications, he also supervised some of the communications that went on. So, I mean, he wasn't like, you know, your warrior type soldier. But as I say, he did his job to the best of his abilities. And I think the other fascinating part about that I found about my book was just the setting, Oahu in the 40s, how different it was then from now. I mean, you had Hickam Field and Pearl Harbor as well, the naval base, cut from a swath that was just, you know, pineapple farms and sugarcane farms. So it was a very pristine environment when they were there.
And non-commercialized, like it is now.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And you know the song from the line from the Joni Mitchell song about they paved paradise and put up a parking lot. That comes from her flying out of Honolulu Airport and looking down. That's where that line comes from. So Honolulu is the epitome of, you know, development run amok.
So now your dad's letters are censored, and I got that because we had a war going on.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of content was in there besides, boy, I miss you and wish I could take you out on a date or whatever?
I think that's an excellent question because my mother, in fact, said to me, what are you going to find in those boring letters? But actually, they were pretty substantive. My father was quite tricky. A lot of times he would mail his letters from town. So he didn't divulge any secrets, but he was pretty open about his disdain for military bureaucracy, that kind of thing. You know, he had a very nuanced view of the war. This is not a rah-rah book, let me just say that. He would gripe, of course, about the food, about the laundry. You know, they had to pay $1.75 a month for laundry services. When he said they washed the uniforms threadbare. You know, they'd come back with no buttons on, then they'd have to sew their buttons on. So it's that kind of stuff. But it does paint a very clear picture of what life was like. They would go to town to eat in the restaurants there. He talks about that. And, of course, the research I did, it talks about the brothels in Honolulu. It was the only place that was a U.S. territory that had legal brothels. And there were many, many of them. And they were owned by the Chinese, and they pulled in $1 million a month in money.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Whoa.
Yes, from all the servicemen there.
That's $1,940.
That's $1,940.
That's worth, whatever, $50 million today.
So,
God.
So, yeah, the whole setting is almost a character in my book because it was just a fascinating place.
Now, did your dad, in his letters, when he's describing all this, did he voice, I guess an opinion, I don't like this, it's not the way I was raised or whatever?
Well, he does say at one point, the Army's no place for a man with an artistic temperament. My father was an artist. He was a painter. And, I mean, I guess he was temperamental because that's also part of my book. The subtitle of my book is My Father's Two Wars. And what that refers to is, he was in World War II, yes, but the Second War was an internal struggle that he had. So, yeah, he did struggle with temperament, and that does come out in the book. All soldiers whine, but he does state his opinion about a lot of things. Yeah.
Interesting. All right, so he stays at Hickam Field until 43?
He left Hickam in February of 44, and he went to the Gilbert Islands.
All right, so before he left Hickam, he took a furlough and got married?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
And he came back to Hickam, and then he's off to where?
To the Gilberts.
The Gilbert
now,
Islands.
He had implied to my mother in letters before he went home to get married that, oh, maybe you can come back with me to Oahu. Well, things changed. And so the last letter he wrote to her before he went home for the wedding says, I'm not so sure you're going to be able to come back with me because for reasons I will tell you about. What he was referring to, I realize now, is that they were going to ship him out. And so there was no point in her coming to Hawaii. He wouldn't be there.
Well, I would imagine your mother had a few responses to that when she heard that, didn't she?
Well, she says, I'm sure you know what's best. I have to say, my mother was a very sheltered country girl. She lived with her parents. You know, she did have a job. She worked as a secretary. She went to business school. But, I mean, she was just a very naive country girl. It really comes out in her letters. And it's an interesting contrast between her and my father, who was a city guy. He was from Norristown, which is close to Philadelphia, and it was a factory in Milltown. And then here he was becoming very worldly with, traveling to Oahu. So there's that contrast between the two of them that I think is very interesting.
All right. We're going to take our mid-program break. Reminded that you are listening to Straight Talk, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, always ready. And, of course, we broadcast live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Fresh subs and salads prepared right before your eyes, 7 days a week. Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden. It is always delicious. And we hope you'll stop by for lunch or dinner any day of the week. Back after these words.
News, politics, and stories that matter to you. Straight Talk.
Cooler weather means it's time for Substation 2 to bring back their fabulous gyro sandwich. Right, Charlie?
Yes, ma'am, it is. Our gyro is made with beef and lamb, served hot on warm, soft pita bread with tzatziki sauce, tomatoes, and onions.
And it's delicious.
The gyro is back in Substation 2, but only for a limited time. Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Good Pharmacy is completely remodeled to better serve our senior citizens with geriatric medicines, home care convalescent, and health care needs.
This is Laura Hyatt-Swift. For 50 years, our family has been caring for your family.
Good Pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue, Rock Hill.
Switch now to free checking with eStatements at Founders Federal Credit Union and get access to a free Visa debit card, no minimum balance, and Founders online. Applying is easy. Visit one of our 25 locations or apply online at foundersfcu.com. Not a member? Visit relaxjoinfounders.com or call 800-845-1614 to see if you qualify for membership. Relax. Switch now. Services require credit evaluation. Terms and conditions apply. $2 fee for statements by mail. Founders Federal Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA.
Comporium is one of our strongest community partners for promoting local economic development and supporting community events.
Take a look at the number of jobs that they provide, the payroll dollars that they provide, the purchases that they make from local vendors.
Comporium is one of the strongest education partners from the elementary schools, the universities, and the colleges.
From your community and proudly serving your community, Comporium, making life easier.
Here's an idea from Substation 2 for your next business meeting.
Box lunches are perfect for your corporate outings. We include a 6-inch sandwich we put in a side. You get chips, potato salad, macaroni salad. We throw in a cookie. You get some tea or lemonade with that. It's basically a complete meal in a box.
Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk continues now on News Talk 94.3 WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Local author Liz Williams is with us today. She has written a book about her dad called No Ordinary Soldier, which is based on a cache of letters that she managed to commandeer for her mother before she threw them in the trash can. And she found out all this interesting stuff about her dad during World War II. He was there at Pearl Harbor at Hickam Field when the Japanese attacked, and then he went on to a number of different war fronts. And I guess he was, Liz, he stayed in until what? Everything was over with?
Yes, sir. And that was another one of his complaints. Once the Pearl Harbor was hit, he was like, oh, man, I thought I had a three-year stint. Well, sorry.
3 years became five or six
exactly,
or whatever.
Exactly, yep.
So when he came home, he did what? What did he do?
Okay. One of his complaints in the letters was, this army hasn't trained me to do anything. But actually, it did, because he worked as a commercial illustrator for a while, but then he became a teletype or linotype operator. He was in the printing business, basically.
Right.
Back in the day, that's how they did printing, and that's what he did. He was in a union in Philadelphia, so he did fine.
So one of the things that we learned about World War II was how America went to work in supporting the war effort. I mean, instantaneously, America became galvanized to defeat the Japanese and the Germans.
Yes.
And while every man in sight was lining up to go into the service, many of the women were going into the factories and producing the airplanes and the tanks and everything else that we needed for war. What about your mom? Did she have a role in that?
She talked about getting a defense job and was asking my father's opinion all the time. Do you think she worked at a bank when she got out of business school? She said, do you think I should try for a defense job? And his advice was, well, where you are, it's a permanent job. With a defense job, you don't know if it's going to be permanent. So she never did go for one of those. But it was a time when women and African Americans had opportunities they never had before. And it's part of what I think is the really exciting part of the 1940s, is there were new opportunities for women and for other ethnicities.
So what did you learn from the letters about what the heck was going on back here in the good old U.S. of A. while everybody's focus was on the war?
One thing that I thought was fascinating, Manning, was this business of allotments. You know, women who married servicemen got a monthly allotment from their paycheck. So there were a lot of women out there that would marry five and six soldiers or sailors, and they were known as allotment annies. And they would collect these paychecks until the authorities would catch up with them. In one case, there was a woman from Norfolk. Her name was Elvira Taylor. And she married six sailors, and what happened to her was, two guys were in a bar, I'm not sure where, but they took out their picture of their wife, and it turned out to be the same woman. Well, they got into a big brawl, and when things cooled down, they got the authorities after her, and she had to go to jail. So there were many stories like that, and I think it's hilarious. I mean, it wasn't very nice for the soldiers, but, I mean, there were some women that didn't behave so good. And another thing that I found out that was fascinating was they had something called the Old Man's Registration, or the Fourth Registration. The Selective Service Act required on April 27, 1942, that all men between the ages of 45 and 64 fill out a form so the government could manage the skills of these men to see if they could be put to use for the war effort. And
sure.
I stumbled on this when my father wrote in one of his postscripts to my mother, tell your dad I don't think he'll have to be in this war. And I said, well, what on earth is he talking about? And then in some other research I was doing, I came across this old man's draft registration, and I put it together with the date. I said, well, that's what my dad was talking about. So that's the way the research unfolds sometimes, and it's really fascinating.
Did the letters indicate anything about what life was like in terms of just normal commerce, that you couldn't get bread or milk?
Oh, yes. The OPA, the Office of Price Administration, that they were the rationing board. And my mother makes many references about how they had to line up at the various textile mills to get their two pairs of stockings that they were allowed to have, the women. And, of course, the sugar was rationed, the gas was rationed. And my mother talks about carpooling to work because of the gas. And she also talks about bicycling to work at one point. So the war did affect people, their everyday lives, greatly. Not so much you and I that have experienced from the Vietnam era, you know, it didn't really affect our everyday lives, but these people's lives were affected tremendously. Of course, they had the gas rationing cards. I mean, the sugar, the gas, the rubber. You couldn't. My father was a tennis player. Well, he wore holes in his tennis shoes, and he was asking my mother to get him a pair of sneakers. She couldn't get them anywhere because, you know, they were just not to be gotten.
Big difference between a world war and a regional conflict.
Absolutely.
And we were totally in.
Yeah.
Battling on both fronts.
Yes, we were.
So, is there what would you say, a message or a conclusion from this that you've reached after reading all these letters and doing all this research?
That's a great question, too. Well, one part of this story, it is my father's experience in the context of the larger war and my mother's on the home front. But I also discovered a secret about my father when I did my research. So there's a little part of this story that's my story of discovering my father, because as I mentioned to you, he died when I was 18. I really didn't get to know him as an adult gets to know his or her parent. So it's a very interesting thing about my father that came out, and I think it'll keep the reader interested.
You're not going to tell me?
No, I'm not going to divulge the secret.
Oh, my gosh.
Absolutely not. But what I think people can take away from this book, besides that personal story of mine, is that the 1940s was a very special time in that everybody did pitch in, everybody made sacrifices, and it's a very proud time for our country. I felt very proud that my father served, and I'm sure you feel that way about your father and grandfather.
And when you hear stories like this, and you hear, you know, Brokaw pinned it best when he called it the greatest generation, and we see why, the men and women came back. And they went right back to their homes, and nobody got, you know, just didn't do the kinds of things that happened today. I often wonder if your father, my father, others who were here in World War II were alive today, what they would say in terms of how our political discourse, our, I don't know what you want to call it. I mean, face it, in 1940, we were a split nation. We did not want to get in a war. We finished World War I. We did not want to think about what was going on in Germany with Hitler taking over all the European countries. We didn't. You know, we're not going to get in a war. Franklin Roosevelt said we're not going to get in a war unless we're attacked. Mm-hmm. But when we were attacked, boom, we instantly galvanized, just the way we did after 9/11.
Right.
We instantly galvanized.
Yes.
And then here we are, whatever it is, 15 years later. And we're about as polarized as we've ever been.
Mm-hmm.
Our politics is crazy. It's all over the place. But, I think the story about America is that America will do what it has to do to always be America. And your father did it. Everybody else who fought in that war did it. It's interesting.
Right.
So this book is called
No Ordinary Soldier.
And the subtitle is My Father's Two Wars.
Yep.
And it is available, like, where? Everywhere?
On Amazon, on Barnes & Noble, right. And I believe other online booksellers. I have a few in my garage, but you'll be able to get it easily.
Okay. Yeah. You gotten feedback on this yet from people?
You know, thank you for asking that. Out at Sun City, where I live, and hi to all my Sun City people, I have four or five neighbors that have given me feedback, and they actually said they loved it. So I think I'm tapping into something. I'm a baby boomer. There's a lot of us out there. I mean, I know marketers don't cater to us that much anymore, but we still are a large market. And a lot of people's parents did not talk about their war experience. So,
her name is Liz Williams. The book is called No Ordinary Soldier, My Father's Two Wars. Go get it. It's a good read. I think you'll find a lot of interesting information. And that'll wrap up our Straight Talk program today, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Caporium, always ready. And, of course, we broadcast live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Fresh subs and salads prepared right before your eyes, 7 days a week. Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden. Come on by and enjoy lunch or dinner any day of the week. Even the proprietor can't get it right. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.